Welcome to Boob Talk with your host, Cynthia Rogers. It's season 3. Come and join the Boob Talk family as we discuss the issues breast cancer and other cancer survivors face. Come along on our journey. We are survivors. Welcome to Boob Talk, and I'm your host, Cynthia Rogers. Thank you for joining me this evening. Tonight, we have a special Survivor Spotlight. It's time for Survivor Spotlight, shining the light on the courage, hope, and faith of a survivor's journey. Our special guest tonight is Jamie Sherling. She's a breast cancer survivor, author of the memoir From Queens to Queens, and clothing designer of YDY Suites. Jamie, welcome to Boob Talk.
Thank you so much.
We're so glad to have you with us this evening. And I just wanted to say first of all, I thought the title of your memoir, Queens to Queens, was very unique and quite catchy. So could you tell us what inspired you to write your personal memoir, From Queens to Queens?
So thank you first for that compliment about the title. I appreciate that. I decided on the title early on, and it really stuck, and I never changed it. So I felt like, oh, I may. And I would tell people the title of the book while I was writing it, and people would either react to say, aw, or ooh. Like, there was always a good reaction, so I'm happy. And it is a play on words. It's from Queens to Queens because I lived the first 7 years of my life in Queens, New York. So it's from Queens, New York, to then talk about the drag queen community.
Oh, that's very interesting. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, like I said, born New Yorker, and what inspired me, I really didn't know that I was going to write a book when I started writing the book. I had been through some trauma, of course, one of those things being my breast cancer journey, and wrote just some notes in September of 2019, because just it was a pivotal point in my life and just kind of writing some things, but I didn't really know I was going to write a book. And then March 2020, at least for most of us, the world turned upside down. And the spring of 2020 was when I wrote most of my book. And I wrote it in part because I needed more to do with my time. I mean, I was working full time, which I am grateful that I had a job in that time during the pandemic. I'm grateful that I was working from home, but my entire social life was ripped out from under me. And that, as an extrovert, was really hard. And a single extrovert, I have children who are with me half time. So every other week I was completely, completely alone. And that was really pretty terrible. So I just thought, well, I'm just that kind of stubborn person to say, fine, I guess I'll just write a book then. And that's what happened.
So in September of 2019, you said you were taking notes. So what made you decide, hey, I'm just going to start taking notes? Had you been diagnosed with breast cancer then?
I had already. By September of 19, so I was diagnosed in April of 2018. So by September of 2019, I had already had surgery, had chemotherapy, had radiation, some major changes in my personal life, which I don't want to tell because I want to be a spoiler, but some things even more than the cancer happened in September of 2019, where I think it was just a cathartic experience, almost like a diary, like just kind of writing about some of the things up to that point.
So how did you find out you had breast cancer?
So I had had a mammogram in 2017, just thought I was the right age. I was 40. A friend encouraged me. So sure, that's a good idea. There were a couple spots, and I was really scared that I had cancer. But then it turned out, oh, they're just calcifications. You're okay, but come back in a year. So fast forward the year, I almost forgot to have another appointment just because it wasn't really top of my mind at all, and had a mammogram. And I believe that time I had the mammogram, then I was called and told that results were blurry or something, that I asked to come back in and have another mammogram. So I got the other mammogram And then they said, oh, there's something here. We need to test it. So I had a biopsy. So I was still not really nervous, though, which sounds odd because it turned out that's when I had my diagnosis. But I had had all those things the last time. Back in 2017, I'd had a mammogram and a biopsy then.
Okay.
So this time, right at maybe the day after the biopsy, I got a call from the nurse while I was sitting at my computer working, and the nurse said, you have cancer.
What went through your mind?
Probably some expletives that I won't say, you know, keep it family friendly, but I was just so upset. You know, there was the shock, because you think, well, this isn't happening to me. I'm not having cancer.
Exactly.
You think it happens to other people, which unfortunately it happened to too many people in my life. I have a brother who had lymphoma, and my dad had lymphoma. So even though I had even had other people have cancer in my family, I thought, well, that's them, not me. And yep, now it's me. And then it quickly turned into, okay, what are we going to do? And just as the universe would have it, the surgeon was available the next day. So I'm sure that's not very typical, but I think it was just
typical.
Right. So I didn't think so. But the nurse just said, you know, this doctor has an opening tomorrow. And I said, okay, I'll come in tomorrow. So it went pretty quickly to let's figure it out, because I did have that appointment right away. And then it was a lot of take a test, wait a few days, take a test, you know, wanting to see where was it, had it spread, and then which treatment will come next. And then I had genetic testing. So it was one thing after another for probably a good 5-6 weeks before we finally had a plan, and this was the treatment. This was going to be what my medical team thought was the best way to go.
So you mentioned that your brother and father had lymphoma. So when you did the genetic testing, did you have a gene?
So I have the CHEK2 mutation, which I had never heard of up until then. And it didn't link itself to other, like to lymphomas or to blood cancers, but it, the increased chances of having breast cancer in my other breast, that was 30%. So that's what made me, so I had a double mastectomy because of that, because I thought, no way, I would just be waiting. I felt like I'd be waiting every year. Is now the time? Is now the time? I mean, 30% is pretty high to me. So breast cancer, ovarian, and colon, I think, are the three that come to my mind immediately. So
yeah.
So I have to watch those things. So I have colonoscopies, probably more than the average person. And so I do have that genetic mutation.
So, Jamie, what was going through your mind when all of this was happening? Is this when you said, oh, let me just start writing things down as to what's going on and how I'm feeling?
No, I didn't write it all then. At that time, it was really, number one, what's the plan? What are we doing? How are we dealing with this? You know, working with my medical team. But the other thing that was really stressful was keeping this from my children. So at the time, they were kind of early teens, tweens, and I didn't want to tell them until I knew what was going on, because just to say, well, I have cancer, but I have no idea beyond that. I didn't
right.
think that,
that
was
makes
fair
sense.
To them at all. So it was hard. Like, I would get a call from a doctor and I'd like race outside the house and I'd be talking on the phone outside because I didn't want the kids to hear, and telling maybe my best friend, but not putting it on social media, and that whole piece was actually really stressful. And once I don't even remember exactly when, I think it was just before I had my surgery, then I did decide to put it on social media, and I've been pretty open the whole time. And it's a lot easier for me. I know some people don't, they keep it very private and they don't really tell anybody. I am quite the opposite.
I know. I was like
that
too.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
So you were in the
boat. Social media helped me.
Oh, me too. Me too. And
it was like therapy.
I realized that I have a lot of people who care about me, and I'm sure you do too. And they want to know. And also, if you're trying to update people individually, if you have more than a small circle in your life, that can be really hard.
Yes,
you're thinking, well, did
true.
I tell this person? Did I tell that
right.
person? Well, I don't know. Maybe I did. No way. Too hard.
Right. That can be stressful in itself.
It was for me. It was, I really think it was actually a lot easier. I mean, everything's still hard, But the being open piece just made my life easier, and not having to tiptoe around and have secrets or tell who and who not to tell and all that was a lot easier.
Now, how did you cope with coming to the decision that you were going to have the mastectomy?
So I went back and forth. I mean, I knew I was going to have a double mastectomy, and that I actually didn't really struggle. I wouldn't say I didn't struggle because I did, but I didn't struggle with the decision because of the genetic testing. And so as soon as I had had that genetic testing, I thought, okay, I am definitely doing this. The question was whether I was doing reconstructive surgery or not. And I struggled with that a lot more. And part of my plan with my medical team was to see a plastic surgeon. And I just went along with it, and I did. And after that discussion, I knew that I couldn't, even if I did want reconstructive surgery, I wouldn't be able to have it until the following summer. So my surgery was in June of 2018. So because it would then be followed by chemotherapy and radiation, I wouldn't be able to. The plastic surgeon said, you could find somebody else, but I won't do reconstructive surgery until then. And so I was weighing all the different parts of it. Do I want to do reconstruction? Do I not want to do reconstruction? It was definitely implants, all the things. But I do think part of my decision there was just thinking about the next summer and realizing that I didn't want to spend the next summer in surgery after I had just went through chemotherapy and radiation and healing
right.
just to be in surgery again. But no, thank you. And I was right. I had a great summer in 2019. It was amazing.
Well, why was that summer so amazing? Tell us.
I spent a lot of time with friends, and I went to a lot of drag shows. I live in the Midwest. I live in Madison, Wisconsin, and I love the summer here. Time by the lake and patio seating outdoors and just getting to be warm because so much of the year we're freezing here. So just getting to enjoy my summer, whereas if I had been in surgery, I wouldn't have been enjoying it, not the same way, maybe not even at all.
Definitely. So you've just mentioned that you went to drag show. So can you give us a little bit of a hint as to how this relates to your memoir, Queens to Queens? Because you mentioned earlier that this involved the drag community.
Yeah, so I was introduced to the drag community in a unique way. A friend who happened to be a drag queen, who I didn't know they were a drag queen at the time, asked me to be a backup dancer in a drag show pageant, and I had never seen a drag show. I had never seen an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, but of course I said yes. Why would I say no to that? So I met a few other people who were also queens, but I met them in their male-presenting state. I met them as Dan, Jacob, and Michael, got to be friends, and then I saw my first drag show. So saw the first drag show, these were my friends, and then just started going to more. And then my surgery happened, and I was just really, really low, obviously. You know, I didn't, maybe that's not obvious to everyone, but to me, and my body not being what I wanted it to be. And then going to this place where I'd walk in the door, Jamie, and oh, you look fabulous. Oh, look at you. And just getting all this love and joy showered on me when I was at one of the lower places in my life. And I just really leaned on them, and they were there for me.
Well, that really makes sense as to why. I would say, are you dedicating the book to the drag community? I can see how that would be a great inspiration for you during your time of going through that.
Absolutely. I mean, the book is more than just that. There's a little before, you know, talks a little bit about my childhood and not very much. But yes, the real piece of it is it's almost a love letter to them of, oh, thanks. Like, thanks for being there for me when I really needed you.
That's wonderful. So you mentioned that you were asked to be a backup dancer. So I just wanted to be nosy and say, did you have any prior experience dancing?
Yeah, so I have lots of informal training. So I was in high school and middle school. I was in color guard, and I was in drum and bugle corps. And what led me directly to this backup dancing experience was that I was in a musical. So I was in a local theater's musical, and that's how, and the person who was a drag queen was the choreographer. So I got to be friends with Josh, the choreographer, who also happens to be Beverly B, the queen. So yeah, so I wouldn't say I have formal dance experience, but definitely plenty of informal. So Josh knew enough that I could dance because he had written the choreography for the show that I was in. So he trusted me enough.
And how did that go?
It was incredible. It's still just an amazing memory of my life. So I went and I said I met Dan, Jacob, and Michael, and we rehearsed for maybe, I don't know, let's say a month-ish. We've met at this place, Five Nightclub, wonderful place to go watch drag. And we met on Saturdays and practiced, and I learned the choreography. And we were also dedicated because this was a pageant, so our friend was trying to win. So we wanted to do our best so our friend could win this pageant. And so pageant night, we do the performance. I think it went well. And then later on, the queen, our friend, did win. So it was just, we were very excited and big celebration and very fond memory. And that's what led me to all these people. And it just blows my mind, especially now, because now so many of my good friends in town are part of, on the fringes of this community. And to think how many years ago, I didn't know any of them. And wouldn't have even, I mean, other than just meeting them randomly or in another way. But in this setting, again, I'd never even been to a drag show before. And now it's like a second home to me.
So, Jamie, you are a dancer, an author. So tell me, where did the inspiration come for you to become a clothing designer and founder of YDY Sweets? And what is YDY?
So the YDY is you do you. So it's like I'm telling
everyone, that's right.
You do your sweets with a little wink.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would really say my experience with clothing after my surgery. So I will say that it's not that I didn't think for myself. I mean, maybe you could say that. But at the early on part of my cancer journey, I felt like if the doctor said we were going to do XYZ, I just kind of followed along because I'm thinking they know. So it was, let's do genetic testing. Okay, let's meet with the plastic surgeon. Okay, and then so on and so forth. And one of the things after the surgery was you can go here to this place that was actually in the basement of the hospital that had prosthetics. So I thought, okay, sure, like that seems reasonable. And so I went and I got fitted for prosthetics and I cried. Surprise, surprise, when I was there. I'm a very emotional person. I cry a lot. And the woman was so kind and caring and wonderful and got the prosthetics. And I did wear them for a while. And I think they served me well because they were almost like this transition of my body changed. But when I wear these prosthetics and clothes, like not everyone knows that my body changed. Mm-hmm. So much so that I actually hosted a drag show benefit about 6 weeks maybe after my surgery, just because it was already in place and I wasn't about to not have it. So, and I went there and I wore this little sequin dress with the prosthetics. And one of my friends, not a super duper close friend, but still a friend, we were just visiting for a sec and, oh, I'm so sorry, how you doing? She said, oh, when do you have your surgery? I'm thinking, I already did. The girls are gone. So I'm like, wow, I guess the prosthetics do their job because she had no idea. So I'm like, oh, okay. So the prosthetics work. I wore them for months and then I had radiation. And during radiation, my body tolerated it very well. I'm grateful. But after radiation was finished, that's when all of the soreness and like my skin was on fire. It was terrible, like worse than any sunburn you've ever had in your life.
I know.
Oh, it's like my skin is on fire. And I was just slathering aloe and lotion and trying to help. And I wore this big, huge T-shirt. And I was so grateful that I was working from home so I could just wear this big T-shirt that barely touched my skin. And then one day I think I had to go to the store and thought, oh, man, I just don't want to put on the prosthetics. They're not going to be comfortable. And I thought, fine. I'll just go to the store. And I remember kind of walking around timidly and looking and thinking, oh, like nobody's noticing? Or does anybody care? Like nobody cares. And so after that, I had this realization of like, well, I guess I don't have to wear the prosthetics if I don't want to. And then I started trying on my own clothes without them. And most of them, I didn't like how they looked. Because for the most part, women's clothing are made to have breasts in them. So things like the V would go too low. And I know that's different for everyone. Some people say, I'm going to wear a low V-neck and show off my scars, and I don't care. And I'm like, that's awesome. You do you. But for me, I didn't want that. Like, I didn't want to be walking around, have my scars be visible. Just wasn't my comfort level. So I was trying on all these clothes and not liking how they looked, and then had this realization of, well, are there clothes, quote, for us? And did some Google searches and couldn't find any. I mean, I found prosthetics, I found camis, I found other things, but not a clothing line. And I actually posted in one of these closed groups on social media and said, hey, so if I did this, what do you think? And the response was very overwhelmingly positive. And one person actually commented, I've been praying for this. I'm like, oh my gosh, now I have to. I know. And I didn't know how to sew. I still don't know how to sew.
I was going to ask you, did you have any experience?
Oh, no, none. Zero. Zero experience in the fashion industry. Not even at all. But I like to talk to people and I ask for help. So I met with someone at a local college, and then I met someone else from there. And I met with local clothing designers, and working through all of those discussions, but every time I talk with them, I learn something new. And one of the realizations was that I could be the designer, even though I didn't know how to sew. And I can't even think of someone's name, so I won't make it up. But there are apparently some famous clothing designers who also don't know how to sew. I'm like, oh, okay. So I was guided to then work with a pattern maker. It's like I knew, like I could talk to someone and say, okay, make this like this, make
this
the fabric go this way, you know, like what I thought would look good. And so then I worked with a dear friend, my friend Heather. She is an amazing seamstress, and we worked together on a prototype. So we worked together on a prototype. She sewed it for me. And then I found a pattern maker who took the prototype and made a pattern so then it could be reproduced.
That is
amazing. That is how my sweets came to be.
That is incredible. Look at that. Who would have known?
Definitely not me. And if you had asked me 4 years ago about any of these things, they would be hilarious. Just hilarious. Life takes you in pretty interesting directions.
Yes, and I always say there's a purpose for our pain, whatever we're going through, the bad times. I truly believe that it's meant for a reason, for us to fulfill a purpose and a calling. And I truly believe that you have done that.
Well, thank you for that. And that's a beautiful perspective.
So what advice would you give to breast cancer survivors on their journey?
I would encourage them to lean on whoever it makes sense to lean on. And only they know who that is, because maybe a partner or a spouse is that person, but maybe they're not. Maybe it's a best friend. Maybe it's some random community that you found, like I did. So when you find people who you know who can listen and listen without judgment and allow you to feel your feelings, I would say hang on to those people, and if they are willing to let you lean on them, then do that.
Yes, and if someone wanted to perhaps start writing their own personal memoir, what advice would you give them?
Oh, that's a toughie. I would say write as much as you want, how you feel comfortable, hire an editor. That's my advice, because I know my book got a lot better after I hired Nutter. But that was me, because I was just kind of scribbling furiously. Well, not scribbling, I was typing. But I was typing furiously, and it was during the pandemic, so my headspace probably wasn't that great. And I knew that I had, like, the makings of maybe something good, but it got a lot better when I hired an editor. But I would just say be really honest, or as honest as you're comfortable with. I think the best stories and memoirs are come from a place of honesty.
That makes sense. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Okay, good.
And
I would say
if
it's really nagging you, then do it. You know,
right.
I feel like if the thought comes to mind and you're like, meh, you know, if it's not really in your brain, then it is a lot of work. I will say, at least for me, it was a lot of work. But I feel like if it's there and it's gnawing at you, then do it. And it can be daunting, the thought of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to write a whole book? So maybe you just set aside time where you say, okay, during the week, like I'll find either 1 hour, a couple days a week, or maybe a chunk of time, one time that you're not necessarily sitting down, at least I don't know, most people are, sitting down and writing a book cover to cover in one sitting. I think that would be fairly challenging and ludicrous. I'm sure others have done it and good for them, but if that were to be daunting, then to tell yourself that you can work on it over time.
And what was your experience like getting it published?
It was very, I learned a lot in that process because the publishing industry, first of all, has changed quite a bit over the years. And so there are hybrid publishers, there are traditional publishers, then you have the route of self-publishing. And I don't even think I knew that those different categories existed. So I learned a lot about just the framework of publishing, how it is now. And my publisher is a hybrid publisher, so not a traditional publisher. And I am responsible for the marketing of my book. So, which I knew that going in, it wasn't a surprise. But the idea of a traditional publisher that they do all the marketing and do all that for you, that's not the case. And at least for me, one of the things that I took away is that for the most part, especially memoirs, that unless you are uber famous, unless you are famous with a huge following, traditional publishers don't want memoirs from those people. You know, they want memoirs from Barack and Michelle Obama, from people of those caliber, with those kind of followers. And so could I have done things to amass a following for myself? Sure, I guess, but I didn't want to. So that was the choice where, because I could have, whatever, done XYZ on social media, and like I said, built this following, and then went to a traditional publisher, but I felt like the amount of time that might have taken, and the energy, I just didn't want to put my energy toward that. But I will say, if you are someone with a super big following, then go ahead, write that book. Get that check from that publisher.
That's right. Get that cheddar. So, Jason.
That's right.
Since you are responsible for your own marketing, if our listeners wanted to learn more about your story from Queens to Queens, how can they purchase your book?
The best way they can do it is go visit ydysweets.com. So that's ydysweets.com. Because it just goes through, that's where you can learn a little bit more about me. You can see about the clothing line and then also how to get the book. But then if you want to just be simple, you can just go to Amazon and it's From Queens to Queens, How the Madison Drag Community Saved My Life.
Wonderful. Jamie, thank you so much for coming onto the show, for talking to us about your journey and for the amazing, incredible things that you are doing. And do you have any plans to write another book perhaps or perform somewhere else?
The book is a possibility. The joke, because my soulmate, who is my best friend, who is gay and male and has no interest in me, but we're soulmates nonetheless. The day after my book was published, you need to be working on volume two. Leave me alone. So
sounds good.
I have notes, but I don't know if I have it in me to write another one. So it's a possibility. But I also feel like I said a lot of things, and I sort of like where the other one ended. So I don't know. It's a maybe.
Okay.
It's a maybe.
Okay.
And performing next, I don't know. I was supposed to perform myself for the first time by myself on a stage in drag, April of 2020, of course. And then it got canceled.
Oh,
I was so disappointed. I had it on my calendar for months, and then it got canceled. So it's a possibility, but I like being in the crowd more. I like being an audience member. It's much less stressful.
Oh, I can imagine. Well, Jamie, once again, thank you so much for coming onto our show. Anything new that you're doing, please come back onto the show and let us know. And once again, I just want to thank you for all that it is that you're doing for the survivors and for everyone else in the community. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You take care.
You too. Bye.
You have been listening to Boob Talk, and I'm your host, Cynthia Rogers. Thank you for joining me this evening and tonight. Our special guest was Jamie Sherling. Thank her for sharing her breast cancer journey and how that led to her writing her memoir, From Queens to Queens, and how that also led her to becoming a clothing designer of YDY Suites. You never know who or what may have a profound impact on your life and bring you into your purpose. Until next time, God bless. You have been listening to Boob Talk with your host, Cynthia Rogers. Follow us on all podcasting platforms and on Facebook at Boob Talk Podcast Group and Instagram at Cynthia L. Rogers Boob Talk Podcast. Remember, never give up hope.